Well, you've had a couple of weeks break from Ecclesiastes while we were gone. We're going back to the third chapter, review for just a moment here, a few verses, and then kind of move forward some. Chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, I think, gives us a little bit more of an insight and view of just the mind of Solomon. And I think to some degree, as we get into the chapter, we see someone who's a little bit cynical in his views concerning some things. Concerning life, I guess you would say. We studied the first part of the chapter here a few weeks ago. Basically, there's a time for everything, and Solomon kind of goes through life. There's a time for this, and there's a time for that. And kind of the end result of some of that was, our discussion was, you know, there's some things in life we just can't control. There's some things in life that is just in the hands of God. And to some degree, it seems Solomon is kind of sore about that. He's kind of upset about that. There's just some things you can't do anything about this. There's a time to be born, there's a time to die, and you may not choose either one. As far as timing goes, we certainly don't choose when we're born, and really don't choose when we die. And that list kind of just goes on from there. And some of the verses that follow that, he goes on with some other points that may be helpful as he's just really considering, again, what is the point and what is the purpose of life. And as we have seen already, and as we have said before, if our view is only an earthly view, well, it becomes rather a sad view of life. And that's what Solomon seems to be struggling with. I mean, in the big picture, and we're trying not to get too ahead to the conclusion, you know, before we need to get there, though there are some many conclusions we're seeing already as he goes through. When he looks at life in kind of a cynical way and just says, what is life? He realizes that life under the sun is something that can have kind of a bleak turn to it, if that's all we know is life under the sun. But it's when we look beyond the sun, it's when we try to look at some things from God's perspective, life looks very different. We can start to see and understand some point and purpose in life. When we look at the first few verses of chapter 3, where there's a time to be born, there's a time to die, and as that goes on, if that's all we could see of life, what would life be? I mean, it just wouldn't be much if that's all we knew was what is life under the sun. It's not much, because it's just for a little while and it's gone. And what hope is there? And at times, even as we go on in chapter 3, there are times that that's the way Solomon is looking at life, is just life under the sun, and it's not much. It doesn't give much hope. But there are some times, even in chapter 3, when he gets above the sun for just a little bit, and he can see some things maybe from God's perspective, and that's where we need to go. And that's what we need to try to see. I mean, the big question that he's trying to answer, and maybe we're trying to answer here, is what is this all about? What is life all about? It's in verse 10 or verse 9 that he goes on to say, what does the worker gain from all of his toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on men. Here again, from this earthly view of life under the sun, when we look at things just from the perspective of what is the purpose of life and where is life going, Solomon's still kind of observing some things from the standpoint here. He's very perplexed. There's a big question mark here in life. But in some of the following verses, maybe, there's some moments here of maybe he's gaining some insight in life. Verse 11. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing can be taken away from it. God does it so that men will revere him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has already been before, and God will call the past into account. All right, let's spend just a few minutes on that. We've talked about these verses some again already. But just reviewing, trying to get back to where we were a couple of weeks ago. There are some things that God does. There are some things that God does in His power and His ability, and with His insight of seeing things above the sun, the big picture, God makes everything beautiful in its time. We struggle to see that. We sing a song that says something about that from time to time, in His time, which I think sometimes I need to sing much more often, just to be reminded that God does some things in His time. My timetable is much faster than God's, I have come to see. But very often in my haste, things are not always done the way they should be. God in His time has some things worked out and some things set that works much better. God, when we look at things from God's perspective, we gain a greater perspective. And I think that's part of what Solomon is saying in these verses here we're considering now. You know, God makes us curious even about the future. You know, there's a passage here where it said in verse 11 that, you know, not only has He made everything beautiful in His time, He has also set eternity into the hearts of men. Something that gives us some curiosity. Something that helps us to want to look ahead, to know that there is something beyond. Because again, if this life is all there is, no matter how grand a life we live, it's not much in view of eternity. And Solomon, it seems, is understanding that to at least some degree. So God has set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. In our wildest imagination, it seems we can still not just get a hold of all that God is and all that He has done. But God makes everything beautiful in His time. The point can be made that God gives, that He has the ability, He gives us the ability to enjoy life. Verse 12, I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live. There are things in this life we find enjoyment from. Even the work or the toil of our hands, he would say, gives us some satisfaction, and we should enjoy that, in fact, Solomon would tell us. You know, God gives us the ability to sustain life, verse 13, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in his toil. This is a gift of God. The fact that we can work, we prayed about that just a moment ago, you know, that we find satisfaction in the work that we do, that is a gift of God. It gives us purpose in this life. God gives us that reason and that ability. We can say that there's things that God does that is so far beyond what we can do or understand. Verse 14 mentions to us, I know that everything God does will endure forever. You know, there are some things in this life, you know, we look at history and things like that, we can see some things that were done a long time ago. If you've traveled in Europe at all, you can see some buildings there that, you know, some of them are, I mean, it's buildings that are intact even, that are nearing 1,000 years old. It's amazing to me. I mean, that's old. Then the view of the big picture of things that God has placed His hands on, what's 1,000 years? It seems like a day is 1,000 years in the eyes of God. You know, and so there's a whole different perspective here. And then Solomon's saying, I know that everything God does will endure forever, no doubt. And no matter what we do and how grand it may be, it'll only endure for a while. And nothing can be added to it and nothing can be taken from it. God does that so that men will revere Him. And so there's this moment of reflection, it seems, with Solomon, where he's stepping back here for a moment and he's looking at life above the sun. And he's seeing some things from God's perspective just for a moment, because he turns very cynical again in some of the next verses here. But we keep getting some of these insights now from Solomon as we're getting into the story a little bit more. And we're starting to see that, yes, in life he has learned some things. And while he has tried everything that his hands can do, he realizes that his hands are limited in what they can do and accomplish and how long it will all last. But what God does will last forever. And so there are some times, there's some conclusions here already that he's starting to reach. And some conclusions that we need to think about and pay attention to. Now some of this, most of this, we've talked about some already, but just to get us in the mindset of where we are in this study, we think about these again. What are your thoughts? What are your comments? Denny. Yeah, what's time? Right. Which God has put in place.
Yes. Now, there's something more that doesn't have any restriction by time.
Right.
This is something that has been given just to us. I don't even think other animals
understand time. Yeah, that goes beyond time. Yeah, where time will be no more. Yeah, good thoughts, Rick. Still trying to figure out time. That's true, with what God said. Don't you wonder a little bit about Solomon? If he wasn't trying to do the same thing to some degree. You know, I mean, he tried everything and tried to explore and discover everything, so to speak. And in his time, he did a lot, accomplished a lot. And yet, what was the end result still? He was still unsatisfied. You know, in our day, in our time, I think many of us have learned that we have limited time, and as our work day goes about and everything like this, we try to put everything in we can. We got to schedule some time for recreation, some time for eating, and this, that, and the other. And we some are very meticulous, you know, about planning out our time. I mean, in the work environment years ago, I went to a number of classes, time management type classes. I mean, and scheduled those for people in my team and stuff like that because time was very important. It's very valuable. You got to put everything in your day, you know, that you can do. I still kind of do that. You know, I still keep a day planner. I've been trying to learn how to do it on my phone. I'm back to the old day planner again, you know, write my schedule out. And, you know, somebody said, well, what are you doing on the 15th? I can't get that working on my phone, but I can open that book and I can say, I've got an hour available or whatever it is. You know, I can still do that, you know, time management. When Stacy was in college, well, she'd be mad if she knew I was telling you this. When Stacy was in her first year of college, first semester, about two-thirds of the way through semester, we were informed that she was really doing really bad in an algebra class, you know, and so we tried to make some arrangements to encourage her and get her some help to do better in this class, but it was too late, man. She bombed the class. Only class that she's ever bombed, you know. That first semester of college can be brutal, you know. And so it wasn't until a couple of years later, I mean, we had many discussions about what happened in that period of time and some adjustments that had to be made and different things. But it was interesting that, you know, a couple of years later, I happened to bring that up about, remember, Stacy, what happened in that first semester of school? And she said, wait a minute, I understand. I just had some time management issues, you know, in that first semester of college. You know, yeah, time management issues. You know, playing Frisbee half the night and not going to school. That's a time management issue. Trying to squish too much in life, okay? Don't we do that still? Okay, so I don't play Ultimate Frisbee, all right? But I still squish so much in the day that when the evening comes, I just kind of like collapse. You know, the days are full. We're trying to get everything in the days that we can possibly get in the days. Some of it, I hope, is of some value, you know, for me and for others. But sometimes we get so busy with life that we forget what it's really all about. And ultimately, we forget who is in control and that God has placed a certain time or a limit, so to speak, of how long we are going to be here and what we are to do and what we need to accomplish. And I'm afraid we spend a lot of time concerned with things that really is not going to matter above the sun. And if we can only look at things, life under the sun, as Solomon was doing, we're never going to find real fulfillment or joy. And if we only look at life under the sun, we will never find life above the sun with the Lord in eternity. And it seems like Solomon is making some of those points for us. All right, Earl, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Before the fall, man's work was enjoyable. Before the fall, Adam tended to garden, tending all animals. He worked. Mm-hmm. But after the fall, it became much more laborious.
Yeah. Toilsome. Yeah.
Now we work, it's a striving just to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. What God has provided. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That Solomon didn't understand, maybe until he's drawing some conclusions later, that there was so much out of control and out of his hands, but we're still within the realm of the hands of God. Yeah.
Our long-term goal is that on a daily basis we can achieve some sense of peace.
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction.
Yeah.
Not for ourselves. Gain for ourselves. But good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right with that. I do. Rick.
Jesus, when Jesus said, "I can't," if they might have life and have it more abundant.
Yeah. Sure. Absolutely right. All right. Good thoughts. Good conclusions. Let's look at verse 16 and following here. There's another shifting of gears. You know, Solomon keeps going back and forth, you know, in his views on some things. Then he offers a little bit of a conclusion. Now we're kind of going back the other way when he says this in verse 16, "And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. And I thought in my heart, God will bring justice, both the righteous and the wicked. For there will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed." What do you think he's talking about here when he says, you know, in the place of judgment, there's wickedness? It's like, you know, how can this be? You know, I think we said before in the class, as we end the chapter 3, there's some things said here that it's almost like saying, Solomon's saying, you know, life's not fair. And I think he's true. That's right. I mean, that's a conclusion. I mean, how many times have you said to your children at times, I mean, when something happens, I mean, like to Stacy, I can think of some soccer games that she was playing where it's like she got fouled or something like that, and it's like, I didn't touch that girl, she touched me. You know, this isn't fair. Well, you're right, it's not fair. Okay, wipe your nose and let's go play ball. Life's not always fair. I mean, and we just have to deal with that. But what's interesting here about Solomon's statements, I mean, basically he's saying, you know, I mean, what happened to good judgment? Wickedness is everywhere. And then where is justice? Wickedness is everywhere. And then I thought in my heart, God will bring to judgment both the righteous and the wicked. For there will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed. Life is not always fair. And there are injustices. And it seems at times that the wicked prosper the most. Is it fair? Well, no, it's not fair. But it's life. That's just the way some things are. But in the end, there's another conclusion here Solomon is making. In the end, God will bring to justice. God will bring judgment. And these things, whether from the good or from the wicked, you know, God will make judgment. Sometimes we need to remember that too. He goes on in verse 18. Now here's a very cynical view of some things. He said, "I also thought, as for men, God tests them so that they may see that they are like animals. Man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animal. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the spirit of man rises upward and the spirit of animal goes down to the earth?" And so I saw that there is nothing better for man than to enjoy his work, because that is his lot. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? I step back from that a little bit. I go, whoa. I mean, what a dismal view here of some things regarding life. Man's fate and the fate of the animals is the same? What's he referring to? What do you think he's talking about when he says that? Dust to dust. Mm-hmm. Okay, what else? I mean, the perplexing part to me in the passage, it's easy to kind of to understand the dust to dust part. In that way, we're no different than the animals. Dust to dust. Okay, what about the part here? Who knows if the spirit of man rises upward and the spirit of an animal goes down into the earth? God knows, well, sure. Now, there are some. Be careful on how we deal with this here. I mean, there are some who believe animals have a spirit or a soul just like man has. Some might even turn to this passage and try to make their point. How do you deal with that? Who knows if the spirit of a man rises upward and the spirit of an animal goes into the earth? Well, how do we know? Mm-hmm. What do you think he's referring to here? Sure.
So this idea that Jews even today differ regarding eternal life. They don't seem to have the real grasp and concept that we have an eternal spirit that lives forever, whether we're going to heaven or to hell.
Well, if we're just looking at life under the sun, how would we know that? That's all we see. I mean, if we're looking at things just from man's perspective, we're no different than the animals. We're no better than the animals. If we're just looking at things just life under the sun, here's all we know is what we've seen. Well, animal dies and it turns to dust. Man dies and he turns to dust. If that's all there is, life under the sun, that's all we see. That leaves us with a pretty bleak view. Well, what is it that gives us any hope any different than that? We just read a few moments ago that God has set eternity into the hearts of men. There is something different that God has offered men. And you know, I mean, we go through the text, we're not going to find anything that tells us that God sets eternity in the hearts of animals. There's a distinction that's made. That goes all the way back to Genesis, the Genesis account. There's a distinction made between man and animals. There's something different there. But here from Solomon's view, and at this point here, it's kind of a cynical view. I mean, if we're just looking at life under the sun, how are we any different than the animals? Well, they die and so do we. But in the bigger view of what Solomon concludes, there's life above the sun. And that's what sets man apart as being different. God. I think this is a big part of the point right here. God has made us in a way that's different, fashioned us in a way that's different, where we can see and understand some things differently than animals do. But the only way that we can see life as it is truly meant to be is if we can see God. Is if we know and we understand God and we're listening to Him, life above the sun. If all we see in life is life under the sun, how miserable must we be? Because there is no hope. There is nothing after this life if we can only see life under the sun. Your thoughts? Daryl.
Right.
Yeah. Good point. All right. Good thoughts.
There's an intention here contextually, but Solomon makes the point that he's saying injustice in the place of judgment, in the place of righteousness, animals don't recognize injustice.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between
Sure.
And that there's something that causes us to recognize when something is unfair.
Yeah, with animals, life continues by strength, by might. You know, if you're in the animal kingdom, those who are weak are killed. I mean, that's just the way it works. You know, I think to some degree at times we slip to the same level, but that's a whole other point, another issue, you know. But that's another analogy with that. Other thoughts or ideas? Let's look on. Let's move into chapter 4 here and see if we can make some other points with that too. Chapter 4. Again, I looked and saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors, and they have no comforter. And I declared that the dead who had already died are happier than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been, who has not seen the evil that is done under the sun. Can we say bleak? I mean, what would a bleak view here? Those who have already died are in a better condition than those who are still living with all the injustices of life. The only thing that could be better is if you're not even born yet and have to deal with the injustices of life. What do you think about that? I mean, how do you deal with that? How would you respond? What if somebody said that to you today? It doesn't sound wise, because here again, it's only looking at life under the sun. What else? Always been. Isn't that true? So 2,500 years later, you know, we can look at some of the same things. We can, you know, if we're just looking at life under the sun, we could draw some of the same conclusions Solomon was drawing. Okay, so Solomon sees some horrible oppressions. Okay, and here's one who's at the top of the game in his day, in his time. And he can see, you know, there's inequities, you know, that's taking place. You know, that there are those who are living underneath the thumbprint of the mighty, so to speak, as even as Earl has indicated here. You know, and what do we do with that? I mean, maybe in this country, to some degree, I mean, we see injustices, surely. And there are those who are oppressed. I'm not denying that. But probably nothing like takes place in some places around the world. I mean, a lot of third world countries where things are just so very different and so very difficult, and oppression is just great to the masses. We don't deal with that in the same way here, really. We have all the more reason, you know, to look at life above the sun, so to speak. I mean, during the Old Testament period of time, certainly God had a great presence, and there were those who were the people of God and who followed Him. But even more so now, with what we have in Christ, indeed, we need to be able to look above, you know, just what is life under the sun. We need to see that there is, in fact, you know, so much more. I mean, Solomon's view here in the first three verses or so are just, you know, the oppression just seems to be just so rampant, so widespread. What he's saying, though, is so very true. I mean, he could see the tears of the oppressed. And he said, I mean, where do they find comfort? They have no comforter. Again, we're looking at life under the sun. You know, power was on the side of the oppressors. You know, and those who were oppressed, they had no comforter. I mean, that was his view. He kind of repeated the same thing twice there. Think about the Christians in the first century. You know, when there was Saul and others like him who were going from town to town, taking from homes those who had become Christians, putting them in prison, killing some. Did they know something about oppression? Well, indeed. And there again, it could have been easy for some who are becoming Christians or those who are hearing the gospel saying, well, why would I want to become a Christian? Look at what happens to those who are Christians. It's not worth it. Really? It's not worth it? If we're just viewing life under the sun, well, it may not look like it's worth it. That's Solomon's view here as he was writing these things. At this point, he's going to come back out of that again. He's going to draw some other conclusions as we go on. But here he's just giving, look, when you look at life, look at these people who are so oppressed. It'd be better off if they were dead. It'd be better yet if they'd never been born. What a pitiful view that is. Look at the next few verses. Verse 4 beginning. And I saw that all labor and all achievement spring from man's envy of his neighbor. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. The fool folds his hands and ruins himself. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. What do you see with that? Here again, it's a very negative view of some things. There's kind of two sides, two hands, so to speak, that's given here in extremes. You kind of have the workaholic and you have one who is lazy. You have one who just who works, you know, he's all about working and achieving, you know, certain things, you know, envies what his neighbor has and says, I'm gonna get me one of those too, you know, and I'm gonna get two. My neighbor's got one, I want two. You know, and just toils to have things. The other extreme is the one who just folds his hand. The fool just folds his hands and ruins himself. Brings himself into poverty, has nothing of his own doing, you know. Solomon's conclusion. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil. You know, that there can be a balance that is found. I mean, he kind of sets up the extreme, you know, the workaholic and the one who's just lazy. There is a balance. There's a middle point there that can be found. Sometimes we struggle to find that middle point. You know, workaholics are those who seemingly are never satisfied and struggle to find any happiness in life. You know, and if work is all that we do and in search of gain is all that's on our mind and on our hearts, that too will not bring joy. Any quick thoughts here as we conclude for the day? Mm-hmm. always have been. That's right, nothing new. Exactly. We can't solve it. Yeah, we can't solve it. And if we thought we could solve it, we still won't find happiness in that, because that's about life under the sun. Lord willing, Wednesday night, we'll take up right here, beginning around verse 7. We'll continue on. Thank you for your comments. If you can, let's move up to the front some here tonight, this morning.